Pop Culture Abadabad, episode 168, White Water Memories. Hello and welcome to episode 168 of Pop Culture Affidavit, a podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panneries. This episode harkens back to the very beginning of this blog. Back in 2012, around the time when I first started it, I wrote a blog post about the Kevin Bacon, Sean Astin movie, Whitewater Summer. The movie came out in 1987. It was not a theatrical success, but it found a new life on video and on cable. And it was a movie that I saw at least half a dozen times back when I was a kid. We would rent it and re-rent it. I found it on cable years and years ago. It is the story of a kid named Alan, who's played by Sean Astin, who, when it was filmed, was coming right off the success of The Goonies. And he's this nerdy kid whose parents want him to experience more than just sitting around and playing with, you know, computers and radios and things like that. So they hire Vic, a kind of an outward bound guide, played by Kevin Bacon. And Alan joins Vic and three other guys, Mitch, played by Jonathan Ward, George, played by Casey Martell, and Chris, played by Matt Adler. So they hike through the woods. And the constant thing of the movie is that Vic and Alan are always at odds with one another. Alan didn't want to be there to begin with, and he keeps making mistakes that, or things that Vic perceives as mistakes. And eventually he will have to pilot an injured Vic down Whitewater Rapids to safety at the climax of the film. It's a movie that is shot beautifully. It's actually, to me, it's very well acted. It's a very fun movie. It's the coming-of-age adventure movie that has a little bit of action to it. And that was a subgenre of the 80s that a lot of us saw. To talk about the movie, I have somebody who got in touch with me through that blog post, left a comment, and his name is Mark Ray. He was the stuntman for Jonathan Ward on the movie. So after I play you the trailer for Whitewater Summer, you're going to hear my conversation with him about what it was like to be a stuntman on a movie, what it was like to make the movie, and some behind-the-scenes stories. So stick around.
14 years, I've done all kinds of camps. Soccer, sailing, computer, tennis, even chess.
It's a unique challenge in the great outdoors.
Until this guy showed up. Nobody really great ever slept in dirt.
And such about a half a mile on the other side of this gorge.
I'm scared.
Ever see a picture of Da Vinci pitching a tent? No. Let's talk about the really great campers.
Sean Astin.
I was young. It won't happen again.
Whitewater Summer.
My choice. No camping.
My guest for this episode was the stuntman for Jonathan Ward on the movie I mentioned in the intro, Whitewater Summer, which starred Kevin Bacon and Sean Astin. It was released in 1987. He's here to talk with me about the film, working on the film, knowing the actors, as well as the movie's legacy since it was released about 40 years ago. It's a bit become a bit of a cult classic. So please welcome to the show, Mark Ray. How are you doing, Mark?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Tom. Yeah, it's finally good to meet you.
Yeah. So there's a little backstory on how we met, and I always find this interesting because I wrote a review of this. I looked this up tonight. August 9th, 2012 is when that was published. That's almost 14 years ago. And what's funny is that in the 14 years since I've wrote it, I've had 26 comments on that post. One of them was mine in reply to somebody else's, but most of them were people like, and just they over the years, like every couple of years, I get more comments on it. I think it's one of the most viewed posts on the site, but there, I'm always getting these comments of people who are like, I love this movie. I remember this movie. This is bringing back a lot of memories. And we're definitely going to get into that as we talk. But where you come in here is that there was a two or three comment thread about people talking about where the movie was filmed, like in California, and what highway was being driven, and you hopped in to confirm it, and then you reached out to me because you were on the set, obviously performing stunts, and you're working on a book about it. And this is a treat. I mean, I've loved this movie since I first saw it. I might have been about 10 or 11 years old, depending on when it came out on video. And I've watched it several times since. But yeah, so what, I guess, before I get into kind of like the behind the scenes of it, what's prompted you to really take this trip down memory lane about Whitewater Summer and move forward on like getting in touch with people from the movie and writing a book?
Well, you know, I mean, years passed, you know, and then it seemed like it just kind of disappeared for a while, you know, early internet and everything. And, but I mean, we're closing in on the 40th anniversary of it, of its release here. I mean, it was filmed in 1985. And then they had edited it together and it was shelved basically for almost over a year and a half. It was just put on a shelf. Mainly, I just found out mainly because the original distributor of the film went bankrupt.
Okay.
And I realized, you know, I know the name of the company. I don't know if I should say it.
Okay, no, it's okay.
It's no longer in, but it's basically, we had two names, and it was called, when we filmed, it was called Ice Cap Cinema Entertainment. Mm-hmm. And another name would be Polar Films, and it had a logo of an iceberg with a polar bear on it. It was around. People might remember it. And so the original shoot was filmed in northernish California. I remember I got in my truck, went to Quincy, California, a small town, just off of Highway 70. And from there, you know, it was just blown away. I'm 18 years old. I'm an aspiring actor and had a lot of training behind me. You know, got a job on this pretty immediately. It all happened within a week or so, and I found myself there, loaded in a van, and we went up to Shasta.
Okay.
To film the first the first river run they did when he had Sean Astin in front of me. And we filmed on a very, very private location that's owned by William Randolph Hearst. It's called Wyndham. It was just around the corner. And I was just dropped off basically the first day or two on a dirt road with an orange vest and a couple of cones saying, don't let any traffic get through here. So, and then, you know, so I was a road cone for the first couple of days, you know, all alone, but it was just pretty amazing. Yeah. And then, you know, we filmed that whole scene, them carrying down and him going down the river, and he did all his canoeing pretty much. They did a lot of their own stunts when they can. But yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I was pretty much, if I wasn't in front of the camera as a double, I was, pretty much beside the camera, in back of the camera, just watching some of the legends.
So I'm glad you cleared up the thing about it being about the distributor, because when I think about it, this was 85. So Sean Astin's coming off of Goonies, I believe, at this point. Yeah. And Kevin Bacon's only a couple of years removed from Footloose. So it sounds like you didn't want to shelve that film.
No, that's it. I mean, it had every chance to really be better than it was. And a lot of it wasn't the filmmaking or the people behind it or the legends that were working on the film even, because there were more I could talk about. I think a lot of it was just, well, the director was, his name was Jeff Gluckman. And that was his first feature film. So he's trying to get used to the cameras, hit the scene, like wide angle cinematography type of thing, because he came off of television. And that's a little different than that. I don't know a lot about cameras, but and also I've overheard here and there, because they were under some stress because of Columbia Pictures and the budget they had originally. And I think they felt a little rushed to get through it originally. And then, so I mean, we started filming, I think it was late September 1985. No, August, late August, went through September. We wrapped Halloween of 1985.
So you said you were an aspiring actor. How did you, and you said you got the job and you were pretty quickly up there. How did you find it in the first place? And like, what was the job selection process like?
I was living in Lake Tahoe in Klein Village, and I was attending weekly acting workshops at a company called Pacific Performing Arts in Sparks, Nevada. So I, travel down the mountain every week. I work, a lot in front of the camera, do a lot of drills, a lot of line memorization. It was really intense. And he, and all of a sudden one day I got a call from from the director of Pacific Performing Arts saying, there's a company here in Reno and they're casting some work in a movie, and gave me the time and date. I called a company. Well, they went to a place called Aviance Profiles off of, I believe it was West Street in Reno. So, I was told a day and a time to show up. And so I drove my little 76 Toyota truck over there and got into a room with a bunch of other, people, a lot of young kids. And it was just kind of, it was kind of dreamlike. I was excited. I was scared. I was nervous. I just was soaking in everything. And then they brought me into a room and I sat down, and they held a picture of Jonathan Ward, his headshot, next to me. And, then they kind of went off in a corner and talked a little bit, and just by their actions and everything, I think I pretty much knew I got it. I got on. So yeah, and then a day later, we got a call saying, "Hey, would you like to join us?"
Now you were 18, so you didn't have to deal with anything regarding underage work or like tutors on set,
No,
like all of the
it all
restrictions.
fell into place. It all
Okay.
fell into place.
Yeah.
And then of course the children on the set, like Jonathan and Sean. The other two were over 18. I think we Matt Adler and Casey Martell were both over. So, but the other two had to have, attend school, online. So I had a pretty big background in mountain climbing, being online. And so they used me whenever they can. And actually, the funny thing is, they weren't quite locked down on Jonathan Ward's hair color for the movie. At first, it was kind of a brown, so they found it easier just to match mine. So they dyed his red,
Yeah,
So I
so
spent, days, like you're talking about the van. That's all Highway 7. That's all Highway 70. We did all helicopter shots. So we had a helicopter. We did about 3 days of helicopter. That must have been expensive. But yeah, I was riding in the van every shot, basically, with, being dressed in a wardrobe from the waist up.
The film, it's interesting because as a first time film director, and I did briefly look at his IMDb page, and he's done a lot of television work. He's still doing television work, but it's interesting because the film is beautifully shot. You watch this film and it takes complete advantage of the setting and the fact that you were all shooting on location. I think,
And
yeah.
the reason why was a legend cinematographer named John Alcott. And we're talking 2001: A Space Odyssey, Greystoke, The Shining. That's my favorite. And I know I just every time he worked, and I was just fixed watching him work, checking lenses and filters and lighting, and before every shot he'd be having guys with fire hoses wet everything down, so it glistened. Yeah, he was amazing, and the movie was dedicated to him, and he died shortly
Now, there were scenes that were shot afterward. So when they decided to finally release the movie, it was, what, 86, 87. And if you there's a framing device in the finished film where Sean Astin, who's clearly older because his voice has dropped and is in Central Park and just kind of walking around and giving this sort of like Ferris Bueller talking to the camera type of smart, smart-ass narration. Now, was he, had he passed away before they did those reshoots, or was that?
I believe so. It was shortly after, really. Yeah, so the movie was shelved, and then it was over a year later, a year and a half. And now, of course, kids grew, they changed, Sean Astin grew, but they were already over budget, I mean, from the start. And then what they did was they rewrote the script. They added a lot of things. They added the narration, the clips, and but the whole ending, the original movie didn't end like that. And there, and I, later on here, I could probably get to that. And that's real crucial. If you really look closely, you'll understand. But they rewrote it. I thought it had a great soundtrack. That was a pretty awesome soundtrack. But what they did was they brought everybody back together and they went to New Zealand. And you could see difference in the trees, you know, from the Sierra Nevada to New Zealand and this. And they ended up filming a lot at the end, you know, the big whitewater, you know, scene at the end, everything else. And they refilmed the bridge.
Yeah, and you were there for that as well?
I didn't go to New Zealand. I was I did the entire I wanted to, and I was jealous, and I really did. But no, I was one of those guys that, that I guess wasn't that important. So, yeah. But to tell you, to be honest with you, they I did the entire first bridge, and it was beautiful. It was up in Shasta, and it spanned over a waterfall leading into, you know, a beautiful lake, little pond lake. Up there, it was just gorgeous when I first got to it. Of course, the deck of the bridge was wider, a little wider, because I got called on set to get into wardrobe right away the first day I was there. And as I was walking out of the trailer, a PA came up to me, grabbed my hand, and said, "Jonathan, don't wander away from the set. You got to get to the set now." They thought I was him. I looked, he looked so much like I was taller than him. But that day, you know, I was first in wardrobe in front of the camera. They're doing live tests, and then all of a sudden they put me in the scene of carrying the canoe. And so we, you know, Kevin Bacon's character went across and did all this thing. And then the, you know, Casey Martell, Matt Adler, and I was in the back, and I was very, very nervous. And all of a sudden they rolled cameras and we started walking across. About a quarter of the way across, I stumbled. My right leg went over my left and I almost fell. And I caught myself. And then I finished the trip across the bridge, and when I got to the end, I thought, "Oh no, I just blew it. I blew the scene. I cost some money. The director's going to yell at me." And then all of a sudden, we go back to first position. The director comes up to me, and I thought, I said, "Oh my God, I'm sorry. And he said, "Wait, you're okay, right?" He said, "Can you do that again 4 more times?" Exactly. So we said, they were different shots with cranes overhead, this and that, because they had a net underneath the bridge just in case someone fell. So they took the net off. They took the net away, and all of a sudden we had a big crane with a camera on it, and I matched that shot 4 more times. When they did the second bridge, Kevin Bacon threw a line in to Jonathan Ward that kind of captured the moment, because Jonathan Ward says, "Hey, Vic, how are we going to get the canoe across?" And he goes, "We're going to leave it here till tomorrow unless you want to carry it across."
Yeah, we'll get into the characterization and stuff, but I'm always curious as to, you know, I've seen behind the scenes of movies on like sound stages and sets where they're setting up stunts that have to go, you know, but this is on location in the mountains. Like how, what went into setting that shot up? You mentioned that the bridge was like sort of reinforced enough for, or there was enough protection there, but like, you know, that has to take most of a day or something to just get that one.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. I think the bridge we shot over 2 days, and I don't know about New Zealand, you know, it seemed like the bridge was higher, maybe it was a little more dangerous, but they do a lot of camera angles and lenses to make it look worse than it is. But no, it turned out good. I think it was stretched out a little too long, you know, but they had to add more to the movie, because when it was first edited, it was, I think it came into under 90 minutes, which featured an hour and a half long. So, you know, they did what they did. But yeah, the original script was totally different. And the original script, they cut out a lot about Kevin Bacon's character and why he might have turned a little psychotic, a little focused on Alan more, like he did, kind of pushing. They cut scenes out of the movie, and then they added that. But all in all, it kind of stands the test of time.
Yeah, it does. It actually, so I had, like I said, I watched that movie when I was 11 or so, and I just remember coming across, I don't know if somebody had rented it or somebody was watching it on cable. I really don't remember how I first saw it, but then eventually I think I re-rented it 4 or 5 times from the video store. And the thing that always struck me was how much of a jerk Kevin Bacon was in the movie, because I'd only seen him in Footloose, or the bits and pieces of Footloose I'd seen. So I knew this is the guy from Footloose, and he's not a jerk in Footloose, but he's like vicious at certain points, especially toward the end where he's basically like gonna leave Alan in the he leaves Alan overnight at one point. I mean, he's torturing this kid. So you said they actually toned that down a little bit, or what was the original kind of depiction of his
No,
character?
there was a main monologue that Kevin did with to Alan that they cut out, kind of saying, because in the beginning you could kind of feel like, Alan was kind of weary when they filmed his apartment. That was filmed in Quincy, in our we took over this where they held rodeos and stuff. We're in this huge
Okay.
building, so every night scene in the movie of a campground was all indoors, the
Okay.
entire rain scene. So we come to set every morning. They'd be exact duplicate of the outdoor camping site of the film. They put a lot into it. They made a forest in there, all plumbed with springs. But he told Alan, basically he says, I was an only child myself. He goes, you were? That was kind of a hint in the beginning. But there was kind of a monologue, and I don't remember word for word. Unfortunately, I lost the script over time. He said, Alan, I relate to you so much. He goes, when I was young, I got picked on, and I got bullied every day. And one day I just had enough. I would get into fights, and I would get hit, and I would toughen up, and I'd get out of that. And that changed me, and it made me stronger, and I could do the same for you. So it kind of led to knowing that he saw himself in Alan. And of course he had some mental issues, and a lot of that was the writing too. But I think he all the performances of the actors in the film, they were genuine. You could tell that they were a character, and they did the most, they could with the script to kind of bring the depth to it that they can. And a lot of it's in the writing, and everything else. But the writer of the film, well, there were two of them. It was Mana Star and Ernest Canoy. And I just know that Ernest Canoy recently, I figured out, was he was a legend in himself as a writer. And he did a lot of early, 60s, even late 50s. But one of my favorite things to do at night is to listen to old radio dramas. And I was listening to X Minus One, and I love those old space radio dramas. And then, it said, written by Ernest Canoy. And I said, boy, that name sounds familiar. So, yeah, he was a legend too.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of his credits, and I'm seeing Roots. I'm seeing Naked City, The Defenders. I mean, yeah, that's some classic television, and such. I don't unfortunately don't have the movie on DVD or Blu-ray right now. I know it's been released here and there. Do you know if any of the old missing scenes, the things that were cut from the film, exist somewhere? If they ever did decide to do some sort of release again, or
Yeah,
if the
I
version had
tried.
been.
When it was released on VHS, I was just praying that they'd have deleted scenes, and they'd show the bridge scene. They'd show, other scenes, that I did, But I mean, I was a double. I was a stunt. You couldn't see my face. I had to walk. I had to follow Jonathan the Lord the first week and get his gangly type of walking down, a little teenager. So, but yeah. But no, I just the whole art of movie making just fascinates me and still does. And and the old ways, like practical effects and working on location. And I mean, that's true movie making nowadays. That was, we didn't have computers and CGI. I don't know what it'd be like to act totally surrounded by a green screen pretending to talk to a dragon or something.
Yeah.
It would be a totally different type of acting.
Yeah, that's it's interesting to me, and sometimes you can
very often you can tell when there's when you have a true on location shoot and things like that versus versus a green screen room. And like I said, they all took advantage of the setting here. One other scene I remember, because I'm trying to think of like the bigger stunts from the film that you might have saw or been in. The bridge scene is like a really important scene. But then there's the scene where they're way high up in the mountains at this point, and they're rappelling across rocks to get from like point A to point B so they don't have to go around.
In the distance, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were you involved in the stunt for that scene at all?
So I did all the mountain climbing. I did all the second unit, like the first shot when they when the camera pulled back and showed the Devil's Tooth and saw us walking. Well, in the very back, I was in the very back. Mm-hmm. You could tell there was a distance between me and the actor. Usually Sean Astin's character, Alan, was in the back. He was always dragging along the whole time. But I was in the back because Mitch got bit by a rattlesnake. So I had to film with a rattlesnake. And they shot the camera down my legs and brought in the snake. But it was cut out. That was another scene that was cut out. And there was another scene cut out where Alan woke up extra early in the morning, walked out of camp, and all of a sudden this doe appears in front of him. And he shared a quiet moment with him, reflected, looking at him. He was looking at it. They cut that out of the movie. And I kind of think it might be because there was one exactly like that in Stand By Me.
Yeah. Which if by the time this got released, that would have been out for, that movie was huge. So yeah, the mountain climbing stuff. So you were already trained in that. They didn't have to really do any sort of extra training for you. Was that as complicated to set up for as, say, the bridge scene or the rapid scenes or something like that?
Only because, you know, getting to the top of the Sierra Buttes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the backside of the buttes had this really long, narrow switchback dirt road that led to the top. And it ended about a quarter of a mile before the top. So all the equipment had to be brought up every morning and set up. So logistically, that, you know, that took a lot of time.
Yeah.
And trying to match light and everything else had to be tough. But what they did do is on the pendulum swing, I came to set one morning and all of a sudden there was an exact duplicate of the ledge brought onto land with the same angle. So They made a fake wall, so the actors could be on there and then set up the camera so they had the exact view of Sardine Lakes below them and everything. So it was pretty cool. They put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because
I have a picture of it too. I have a picture of that.
Oh, that's cool.
I recently ran across all my negatives because right before film, or I think after I got my first paycheck, I went and bought an Olympus OM PC, a camera. 35mm with a really nice lens. So I was just constantly taking pictures and I thought I lost them, but I recently ran across the negative. So I have to get them cleaned and developed. See how much I have left.
Yeah. Cause you sent me a couple of pictures already and I'll be posting these to the website, the show notes. One of the entire cast and crew, one with you and Jonathan Ward, and then the stunt double for Casey Martell. How much time did you spend with the actors and the rest of the crew off, you know, away from work, you know, offset, like while you're, because you're all staying up there while you're on
location. Yeah, well, we stayed at different areas. We stayed in Quincy and outside of Quincy. They put a big part of the crew, the stunt and doubles and everything, on a dude ranch, just about probably 4 miles east of Quincy. And then, of course, I believe Kevin probably got rented a house or something. Okay. And then they had the other actors in some random motels in the Quincy area. So offshoot, I just basically had the caterers, us, you know, and and we actually, it was funny, at the time, the dude ranch had no television. So one of our first demands was, we need a satellite dish put out so we could watch the season finale of Miami Vice. So we got it. All of a sudden, we got this huge, you know, back then they were huge.
White
satellite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so you had to crank them to pick up the...
Yeah. So, yeah, we got TV out there. Other than that, I did what near the end. My father had his, I had my truck, but he also had this beautiful 1963 Buick Riviera. It was a gorgeous car. So I took that down for a week, and I invited Jonathan and his mother, Billy, up to Tahoe for the weekend. And
Oh, nice.
so I drove them up there, and they stayed at a motel on the lake there. What it was called, it's the Hyatt now or something. But and then we had them over for dinner, so they could meet my parents. My mom made them a nice meal.
With Sean and Kevin, I know you probably were in some scenes with them. How were they? I mean, how were they to work with? It's the question you're going to get asked, I guess, anytime
Well,
somebody
it
asks
was
you, what's it
awesome.
like to work with Kevin Bacon and Sean Astin?
Well, for Sean at first, like when we first got loaded in the van, was heading up to Mount Shasta. You know, they were in the van with us, and I just saw little Sean, and I hadn't seen Goonies, yet, but I recognized him, and he was just a young kid bouncing around the van, and I was trying to read the script, and he came up to me and sat next to me, and said, "Hey, dude, are you an actor and stuff?" And all this stuff talking, but every day we walked up to the top of the Sierra Buttes, almost every day, Sean would run up to me, jump on my back, and I'd give him a piggyback ride to the top. So, yeah. So no, he was awesome, and we spent a lot of time together. I didn't spend as much time with Casey. I kind of got a friendship with Matt Adler. We'd walk around set and act scenes out from Caddyshack. Caddyshack. That was pretty fun.
Yeah,
Kevin
that.
was awesome. Kevin was awesome. He did a lot of even the helicopter shots. There were many days he drove that van,
Oh.
and so we'd be talking, and yeah, he was just very, very down to earth, and just yeah, very nice to work with. I learned a lot from him. We played frisbee golf a few times, and a couple times we got invited into his motor home and drank a couple beers,
That's cool.
and he just finished filming Quicksilver at that point. It wasn't
Okay.
really, so he was talking to us about that one.
Is that's the one where he plays a bike messenger, I believe, or he's on a bike? Yeah, I don't think I've seen bits and pieces of that, and it's been probably 35, 40 years. It was probably on TV at one point.
It's a good movie. I watched it last year, I believe, all the way through. But no, it was an incredible time. And then we're talking the 80s, I mean, Tears for Fears and A-ha were on the American Billboard list, and it was just really, really, really memorable and awesome time. And even though 40 years, it seems like yesterday, but it's
And it's funny because I was looking at because there really are, aside from a couple of bit parts with like Alan's parents, and there's that scene at the convenience store where they're looking at the, I think the
Yes.
pennies, like this, that one has twins. I remember that line really vividly. And
Okay, yeah.
yeah.
And do you know who that was?
No, I don't. So
I'm giving away all these secrets
that's
here, but
okay.
so that was filmed in Kromberg,
Okay.
just east of Quincy. It was just this little convenience store in the middle of nowhere. They waited for a logging truck to come by, waited, 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 filmed so they could get that with the van. That store is no longer standing. I don't know, it was torn down a long time ago. But they gave a gentleman who was named Joseph, I think Joseph Passarelli. So who that man was Sean Astin's guardian.
Oh.
Okay, he would, because Patty Duke and John were unfortunately they were going through a divorce at the time, so they were separated. And poor Sean, must have been going through hell in his mind. But yeah, he was his guardian, watched over him the whole time, and they gave him a line. And he was also in the end of Goonies as one of the parents. You could catch him
Oh,
there on
really?
that set.
That's interesting.
So they try to give him a cameo. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it really is kind of an 80s cast in a way, because because the other three actors, aside from Sean Astin and Kevin Bacon, Jonathan Ward had been on. I remember him when I first went back and watched the movie when I was a little older. I remember him from reruns of Charles in Charge, because he had been on that show before they put it into syndication. And then Casey Martell, I recognized immediately because he had played Eddie on Growing Pains. He was one of Kirk Cameron's characters, like best friends. There was Eddie and Boner. And then Matt Adler, my roommate in college, was obsessed with the movie North Shore. So I've seen a lot of Matt Adler
Yeah, Teen
in
Wolf.
my.
He was Teen Wolf. He was in Teen
Yeah.
Wolf.
Yeah.
Casey Martell is, he was an ET.
Yes.
All right. So, and he was just so down to earth. He didn't like talking about his films or anything. He was just very, very shy and down to earth about it.
That must have made this shoot easy if everybody was that relaxed or chill and not high on themselves in that sort of way.
There was none of that. No, they were really, I never noticed any egos, you know.
I'm working my way through the movie as we go, and I'm assuming, you said you were shooting at night, so you're shooting out of sequence. You said that early on, you said you shot some of the rapids and the bridge and stuff. So, as you're going through the things, like, did they prioritize some of the bigger set pieces and bigger stunt pieces early, and then kind of go from there? I mean, how did they organize this shoot to make sure that they got the most out of it when they wanted to get it?
Well, all the primary locations, other than coming back from Shasta, were filmed around in Plumas County, no longer than an hour drive. We filmed at Gold Lake. That was the lake with the island. And so we did all that filming there. The Sierra Buttes were at, right below them were Sardine Lakes, the Sardine Lakes of Plumas County. Highway 70 was real close. Everything was pretty close together. We also filmed, which was a big scene, pretty big scene that was cut out because at the end, they mentioned a ranger station. Just go down the ranger station, you'll find it. Just head, keep the sun at your left or whatever. Well, there was a scene that another scene that was cut out was the original arrival at the ranger station. Sean asked, was missing his parents terribly, and looked up in the trees and saw these big round pieces of machinery. And he knew exactly what it was because, he's carrying around this radio that he built by hand from a Heath kit, basically. And he said, those are repeaters. And goes, that goes, yeah. And he goes, well, if those are repeaters, it must be a two-way radio. So they get to the ranger station and they hire this old man for a day to be the ranger. And it was kind of weird, but there was a couple lines I remember. The ranger comes up to Sean Astin and says, saw a bear the other day. Did you ever see a bear? And Sean Astin looks at him and says, no. He goes, me neither. It's kind of weird. I thought it was a weird line. But he gets in there, he gets his parents on the phone. Of course, Kevin Bacon's there. Sean Astin just says, I want to go home. I can't do this anymore. Send me home. Send me, and starts crying. And then they, basically takes the phone, or the whatever that is, out of his hand and says, oh, Ellen's just going through a little homesickness. He'll be perfectly fine.
I can picture it, even if I haven't seen the scene. And the way you're describing that guy sounds like it belongs in Vacation or The Great Outdoors or something John Hughes would have wrote around the same time, because it's
Yeah, he was
that's
deep. Yeah, a couple lines, but it was just a very kind of cool character. I thought it was stupid at the time, but I think it should have been kept in.
Now, one of the other scenes I remember very, very vividly is right before they go on the rapids. So towards the end of the movie, the climactic scene of the movie is that Alan has to pilot a raft with a very badly injured Vic laying in the back, and they're eventually picked up. And I like the, he tells the others to go to the ranger station. And they're eventually picked up by the helicopter. But the scene I remember before that is it's one of the scenes that's very vivid, is they finally everybody turns on Vic because they've just pushed he's pushed Alan too far. He's just gone too far with the way he was treating the kid. And he starts to like kind of he starts saying, oh, I can take you further up the mountains, I can show you a mountain lion. Like and they chase him. And I remember at one point, because he gets injured because one of them basically smacks him with a boot or
Chris
trick,
hits him with a paddle. Yeah.
yeah, a paddle, that's what it is, and he
They must have
falls.
lost three or four paddles during it and still had it.
Really? Yeah, because he knocks him off of not a cliff, but like enough of a down enough of
Yeah,
an embankment to
you're
hurt
right.
him. So
I went back years later, a couple of years later, and went to some of the scenes filmed at just to kind of a little vacation and kind of reminisce a little bit. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
One of them.
Yeah. Do you remember that? I mean, do you remember them setting up that scene, and how were you there
Oh yeah.
watching that as you?
I have pictures of it too. So it was right there. Everything was right there, and it was actually a cliff. But what they did was they one day we like the carpenters worked overnight, and they built this 30-foot high scaffolding with a plywood base and a mat on top. So all Kevin had to do was get hit and then fall into a mat. And then he was caught, and then they tear their thing completely down, and then film hit him after he hit the ground. So it was all done at the same place, but they built this in pretty incredible rig, the scaffold out of 2x4s. And
That's pretty incredible. That's pretty impressive. And
yeah.
it's impressive to me too that a lot of the locations are accessible, obviously, because they were filmed in a, a state park, national park type of area. But they're accessible in that you, like, but they made them seem so remote, that like you get the impression through the movie, especially as you go later and later into the movie, and they're crossing that rope bridge, which I think the only other rope bridge I've ever seen in a movie that's scarier than that is probably the ones in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh yeah.
But they're doing that, and they're parallel, pendulum across this mountain and everything. It makes them seem like, how far away from civilization are they? And I'm always impressed that they can take something that is way more accessible than that, and do that through editing and through
Oh,
cinematography. That's
definitely.
that.
And it was. I mean, the areas were remote, but they were also pretty close together. It wasn't, Teamsters didn't have to drive too far. No, it was just beautiful. The whole location up in Plumas County, everybody was just wonderful. The people who owned the Dude Ranch and pretty much everybody, the whole town kind of came together, just welcomed us.
The shoot ended, you said, sometime in like late October, like on Halloween or thereabouts.
Halloween, yeah, I think we wrapped on 29th of October.
I mean, how did that feel? Because I think you had mentioned this was one of your only stunt credits, and so it would have been your first movie. So how did that feel for you wrapping this experience, which is really the first time you've ever done that, as opposed to somebody like maybe Kevin Bacon, who by this point had been in at least four or five pretty big movies, even if he was a supporting player here and there.
It felt good. That got me getting onto the stunt team got me my union card, Screen Actors Guild. That's pretty hard to get. No, I just felt on top of the world, basically. It was sad. I felt sad. I was leaving people I got to know. We wrapped and we had a party at the, I think back then, I don't know, I think it was MGM Grand in Reno back then, which is now Grand Sierra Resort. But we had a big wrap party there. And then I just sat and waited for years and it never came out. It was released in the Northwest, very limited for a very short time. It didn't gross much at all. But when it got released on VHS, that's when I started getting residual. That's when it started picking. It, just like Tremors, Kevin Bacon thought that was going to be a complete flop. He thought his career was basically over. He worked on Whitewater Summer and that flopped and that was shelved. So now he's working on a movie with killer sandworms and stuff. And he actually thought, and he was having his first child born during the filming, of Tremors. But it turned out to be an incredible franchise. I mean, the original script of Whitewater Summer and the ending of it could have led to a sequel, but it just never happened. It was just a lot of it how just how businesses run and that.
I mean, without giving too much away, because like I said, you're working on a book about this, so I don't want to, kind of go too far. What can you tell us about that original ending, as opposed to what we
It's all.
get?
Oh, yeah, I don't mind. I mean, the ending of the movie could never have happened. I'll just tell you that. Him getting the canoe and taking Vic down could not have happened because when the kids finally run down and run across that little creek that I almost rolled my ankle on
Oh,
playing around
really?
and got to the canoe and then found out that Vic beat them down the mountain. If you look closely, When Alan's standing by the canoe, you'll know why. Why that could not have happened. If you look closely, I'll just say look closely at the canoe.
Okay, I'll have to. I'm gonna rewatch it when I get the chance soon. So it's because it is on. It's when we're gonna get a little more into this. It is streaming, at least according to IMDb, on Roku and Tubi, and you can also like rent it
Yeah,
from
and then
Amazon.
it's free on YouTube every once in a while and
Yeah,
stuff. But
yeah.
yeah, no, I mean, but after wrapping, no, I was just I got lucky. I never wanted to move to Los Angeles. I don't like it. My family went down to LA, Los Angeles, about a year and a half ago, and after 30 something years, I met up with Jonathan, and he has a wonderful business making custom four-wheel drive vehicles, classic vehicles called Icon. And he's got this incredible business. He got out of the acting trade, many, many years ago. But it was just awesome to see him again. And the first thing he said was, "Hey, I'm finally taller than So, but yeah, I mean, and then going back to the stunt team, I was so fortunate. Another legend that I have to mention, who was a stunt coordinator, was named Lauren James. And I just followed him around like a little puppy. He was a legend in Hollywood. He was Steve McQueen's stunt man in the movie Bullet. Right. So yeah,
Oh, that's
another
such a good
Hollywood
movie.
The Last Action Hero. He was actually him and his wife had a cameo when Arnold gets into an elevator.
Did they tell you the movie had been shelved, or you just you're off,
I didn't
you're
know.
done filming, that's it, you don't have to know anything about it until it comes
Yeah,
out?
I had no idea. It just went dark and disappeared. And I knew nothing until I finally got some leads on, newspaper articles about having it released on VHS.
And so when you saw it for the first time, what did you think?
I was just looking at everything, and every shot I saw, I was there. I was standing behind the camera, so it just all brought back all the memories. Did I like how they rewrote and rearranged things? I don't know. I think it turned out good as an 80s flick. Even the narration and the ending and everything, because that's kind of the way things were back then. The soundtrack. A lot of times, when Alan was on the island, and what was it? One of the songs was playing, and it's almost like movies back then were almost shot like music videos
Yeah.
sometimes. It just I thought it turned out really well. But I'll have to tell you, I mean, I'll just say the original ending basically ended when the kids were going down the mountain and Vic was leaning against the tree and Alan was trying to make a fire with the bow drill. And he said, "I kind of lost the matches," and all that, and then the camera slowly pulls back further, further, further. You could see the boys on a trail and leading down the mountain. And then eventually pulled back so far and panned to the mountains in full glory. The movie really didn't end. That was the end of it.
I see why they did the rabbit scene then, because they probably thought this is an action adventure movie for, the kids. It's not a kids movie, but it's clearly aimed at that sort of like mid teenage,
Coming of age, yeah,
yeah, the
coming of
coming of
age.
age movie. So you've
We
got
always
to
called
have,
it we
so
kind of
I.
called it teenage deliverance, basically.
Oh, that brings up too many weird visions. But yeah, I because you've had the 80s is like full of movies that have a lot of like action, so there's got to be some sort of climactic
Yeah.
scene. So I totally understand why they went the way they did with the rapids, especially since
Me
earlier in
too.
the movie they had been
Me
on
too. And I liked it. And I kind of liked that fake ending when the credits started rolling and he goes, "Whoa,
the
whoa, whoa, that was never done before." So that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was clever too. And then you don't know he's in Central Park until I think the very, very end. Like the last shot of the movie is what like what you were saying, except it's Central Park instead of like the mountains. He's like walking away and stuff.
No
And
camping for me.
yeah, and the song playing over the
Be good
credits,
to yourself.
yeah, by Journey.
Steve Perry. Steve Perry.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. I thought, wow, they got Steve Perry. They got that.
So,
I mean, Bruce Hornsby in the Range, you know.
yeah, I actually, so I think right around the time I wrote this 14 years ago, I had rented the movie. This was back when Netflix was still sending you DVDs.
Yes,
And
I still have a few of those I have to return.
so I watched it, and you know, I knew a few Bruce Hornsby songs from like the radio back in the day, you know, The Way It Is, Mandolin Rain. And then I heard the two or three songs that are on the soundtrack that are in the movie, and then they're on the same album. So I have you know, I went and downloaded it, and was like really loved the music. So I was excited to hear it, and really enjoyed that. And it fit really, really well with
It
the
really did. It did. I love that soundtrack. Right? But yeah, going back to acting too, and I still love it. It's still a passion of mine. I love, you know, when I worked, the money was good. And then, you know, acting 100 auditions and maybe a few days of work, unless you're an A-list actor. So I do it for the craft. But I was fortunate enough over 15 years up until 2000 was the last film I worked on. But I worked on two other feature films. One was called Things Change in 1988. And I'd worked a couple days on that film. I ended up getting cut out, unfortunately. That happens all the time. But I worked right alongside William H. Macy. And that was basically his first film. I didn't know him, but, you know, just hanging out with him. And I learned a lot from him. We filmed at the up in Tahoe at the old Calneva Lodge up there. Turned it into the galaxy. But I worked, that was a New York film crew, totally different from Los Angeles. They're classier. It just was totally different. David Mamet wrote and directed that one. Don Ameche, silver screen actor, he stood right beside him, you know,
Oh, cool.
just amazing, just being in his presence. Joe Mantegna was in it. It was a really good movie if you ever get a chance to watch it. And then in 2000, I was fortunate enough to work a day, you know, 2 days on one called Waking Up in Reno, Patrick Swayze, Billy Bob Thornton.
That rings, I don't think I've seen it, but it rings a bell.
Yeah, that's another one that kind of tanked, you know, at the box. But it's worth it. It was amazing, you know, being, you know, seeing Patrick and just talking to Billy Bob, you know. So I had a scene with him, just a couple lines, but got cut out. Yeah, you know, I just love doing it, you know.
So going back to Whitewater Summer a little bit, like I said, the movie had a very, very limited release in the Pacific Northwest, and then it goes to video, and like I said, that's where I come in. Somebody had rented it, one of my friends, my dad or whatever, and I don't think I saw the whole movie the first time around. I probably, it was like one of those, I walked into the room while it was playing and stayed for the rest of it, and then we watched it again, and I remember renting it a few times. And I didn't have cable as a kid, so I didn't know. I don't know if this was one of those movies that made its way into like Showtime or HBO and just got
Oh, it
run
did.
like
I
all
got,
the time.
yeah. There was a while there. I was getting checks rolling in from HBO, you know, Showtime.
So it's an example of one of those movies that had that second life on video and cable and got this following, where it's one of those movies that so many people remember and have fond memories of it. And I guess that's what prompted you to start working on this book. So like, what have you done so far? Like, I know you're pulling from your own memories and what you have. Have you talked to anybody else who was on the crew, the cast, or anything to compile what you're doing for the book that you're writing?
No, not really. I mean, right now I'm just basically writing it on my phone, Samsung Notes. I've never, you know, and then, you know, and going through editing punctuation and changing things. A lot of it's my memory, but like when he catches a fish with his hands, you know, I Google that type of fishing, you know, and kind of explain some things here and there throughout. If I don't get anything out of this book, and I'm hopefully I could find a publisher that might take it on for, you know, do it right. I don't know if I want to self-publish, but you know, take a percentage and have it, you know, print on demand. I just think this is a book, you know, that, you know, every fan of the movie should have, you know, sitting on a bookshelf next to their VHS copy.
Yeah. So how far along are you with it, and what's your kind of
I haven't counted. I've got about six or seven chapters. I mean, I can't make it a novel, a huge novel, but
Yeah.
I think between that and all the pictures I'll be throwing in and discussing, I'm kind of trying to, discuss, where it was and more of a behind the scenes and a nostalgic look at the making of it a little bit. And if anything I get out of it, this has been good therapy for me.
Have you watched it recently, in while you're writing it, but or you just kind of.
No, I mean, my family and I watched it.
All right. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and everything. Do you have anything that you could promote, a website or social media or something, if people were interested in either reaching out to you or just anything you follow, or is it just, are we just waiting for like when the book does come out?
No, right now, I mean, I really don't have any kind of link. I don't have a pre-link to a book or anything on that. I mean, I'd like to, definitely read and even answer back if there's any comments, left by fans. I just like to know how many there are out there, really, because some of the reviews in the past, might have gotten 50 or 60 views. Some have gotten more, but I know there's a lot out there, and I just like to, if anything, I'm just trying to bring light to it again, because it's a cult classic. It's gonna live on. I think it's relevant. I think it could have been shot yesterday and still, I mean, other than the North Face, wardrobe and backpacks and everything. But what I really ultimately want out of it is I want Sean and Kevin to mention that they actually worked on this film, and it actually looked pretty, because he never mentions it. So I want to bring light back to it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I again, thank you very. This was fun. This was.
Well,
I like the behind the scenes aspect. I like, knowing about how you did everything. And again, a movie that I've loved for coming going on 40 years, which even to me, because I was born in 77. So even to me, the fact that this is a 40-year-old movie is
okay.
worrying me at the same time blowing my mind.
Yeah,
So.
we're only 10 years apart.
Okay, yeah. So, but no, it's been this has been a real treat. So thank you very much. And I will be right back after this break. Now you shared with me a song that you put together about the film, and I'm gonna go ahead and play that as a transition
Awesome.
into my outro. So
Nice.
I'll be back right after this. And I'd like to thank Mark for coming on. This is a really, really fun conversation, and I'm so glad he reached out to me. I'm so glad we were able to
have that talk. If you go to the show notes at popcultureaffidavit.com, I'll have a post there, and I will put a bunch of his pictures and other things that he sent me to show you from behind the scenes of the movie or other stills and things that point out some things about Whitewater Summer. And as he gets close to finishing that book he's talking about and anything else comes out, I will, of course, keep everybody posted and perhaps have him on again somewhere down the line. And if you have a question for Mark, you want to reach out, you want to hear some more about it or anything like that, go ahead and email me at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com or leave a comment on Facebook or the blog post, and I will forward those to him. So that in case anybody's interested in hearing more about the movie, more about him, or more from him. So I'll be back in about a month. And what I'm planning on doing is talking about Jason Todd. Yes, the second Robin, specifically the DC miniseries A Death in the Family, Robin Lives. So come back for that in March. And until then, thank you very much for listening and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panarese. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.